This is Not Complicated, Just Green, and it's time for an installment of Common Sense for Better Construction. We're bridging the information gap to help you reach a brighter future in the built world.
Today's episode is sponsored by Creative Interface Architecture and Interiors,
making sustainable construction practically impactful.
Check us out at www.creativeinterface.design.
Welcome, friends. I'm your host, James, and I'm very excited to introduce you to Chris Lummer Giddens, an architect, custom builder, HVAC system designer, and building science expert involved in designing and building a variety of projects, from high-performance tiny homes to off-grid homesteads to historic deep retrofits to passive house homes, even hot yoga studios, through his wife Jody's design firm, LG Squared. They work locally, nationally, and internationally with clients looking for comfort, beauty, and durability. They handle architecture, construction, interior design, building science consulting, and a comprehensive approach to creating buildings. Chris often provides his insight through webinars, conferences, and his blog, YouTube, and social media. He's asked to share his expertise and experience with other architects, builders, and industry pros, and also equipment, product, and material manufacturers and researchers to help with improvements in technology, installation methods, labor cost, and improved performance. But what I like the most about him is he's just down to earth with straight talk and common sense. Please enjoy.
Well, communication is a big part of getting the execution done so well. We are trying to convey our ideas, our design, into something that tradespeople can take and produce what we have in our heads, what our clients have invested in. You know, they said, hey, we want this high-performance building enclosure. They want a certain HVAC system, or they want a certain look to the house. And our job is to translate all their, you know, what they've communicated to us, the clients, into something real. As an architect, that used to, you know, when we were just doing architecture, that stopped at the drawing. And then as a builder, I wanted to be able to take what we were trying to communicate on paper and have it with me as a tool to show my subcontractors. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm a consultant, I want to be able to show another builder, say, hey, this is what I'm thinking. All of it is part of that communication, and it's all very important to get every connection and show that clearly, so that if I step away from the project for lunch, or work on something else, I'm not there. They have something as a reference. So the 3D models, the really detailed drawings that we do are for that, for ourselves and for the trades, for the people to see what we're thinking and not have to guess, not have to come up with it on their own, because we're the ones that were hired to come up with that.
So the way that you build a high performance and a long-standing building, is it what made you want to pursue that on this cheaper alternative? You could probably take a lot of other directions. Were you trying to solve problems that you run into? What was the stimulus?
Back in 2010, I had been working for a hospitality firm. You know, we were designing high-end restaurants, and the economy finally caught up to Atlanta. I was looking for work, and I found a company that's doing building science training, HVAC design, and was in that building science world. I've always loved building. I've always understood, architecture and construction is just intuitive. And so I was learning about this building science over the years. And then there was this opportunity to be a part of it, to be in that world. I'd never done HVAC design, but the owner of a company here in Atlanta was looking for someone to do that full time, because he saw an opportunity in the industry for more like manual J load calcs and HVAC.
To handle that in-house at your architectural firm.
He wasn't an architecture firm. He was a building science trainer. He taught people to become Herz Raters, do consulting. He wrote a blog. His name's Allison Bales. He's a pretty well-known energy vanguard.
His blog. That name comes up a
lot. Yeah. So I worked for him for 2 years, basically self-taught how to use the software to do HVAC design, but manual J, S, T, and D, which is starting.
Yeah, sell that out.
Manual J load calculation, that just tells you how much heat loss and gain a building has through all the components, insulation, brick, windows, all of that. You take that quantity in BTUs and you pick a system that can basically replace what was lost or gained. So like if you lose 30,000 BTUs of heat, you need something to replace that so that you're comfortable.
so that you can keep it at a certain temperature.
And see, so many people just think that you calculate how many cubic feet of the house.
Yeah,
it must be two
Brightons, and you're done.
That's the whole thing. But there's so many more nuances to it.
Right.
It can really help a house be efficient as opposed to just an effective unit, but to not overdo it or oversize something.
They used to call them rules of thumb. They're heuristics, whatever you want to say. But those, the industry was using that because houses tend to have always been leaky,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so they would
usually sometimes.
Yeah.
Your old builders say house got to breathe.
Yeah.
They wanted that
airflow. Yeah.
And so as we've gotten to build better homes, that number gets bigger and bigger. So more square feet per ton, which means smaller equipment for the same size house.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing all these HVAC designs that manual S and T are basically part of that. It's like, well, D is duct design. So you're designing the duct system and it's perfectly sized for that equipment. And then the manual S is the actual equipment selection. And T is about registers and, you know, getting the air out into the space.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this whole process and it became design. And I never thought I'd enjoy anything like that. It's like, this is engineer stuff, you know, and that's, I'm fine with that, but I like to be creative as an architect and a builder, you know, and so, but it was so useful, and I dove right in, and I learned it, and I made all the phone calls that I needed to really understand the software and how it worked with the protocol of Manual J. I did that for 2 years. We ended up designing one house while I was there and started an apartment complex. Then I shifted back to going to LG Squared, which was my wife's company. I moved over there and brought all this knowledge that I learned. And so then we started getting clients. We want a high performance. People were starting to dig into it and look at the seams of houses and say, I want better. You know, I want a house that lasts a long time. I want multi-generational. We got into that niche. We started designing high performance because it's an opportunity. It's where people want to be. I enjoy it. I've always been interested in houses that last a long time, don't use a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Ever since I was a kid, I was interested in saving the earth, you know?
Yeah.
So this was a great chance for us to diversify and also to learn to have this ability to design the house all the way through. You know, just the really understanding how a building works. So then you can understand how the systems come into play and how comfortable people can be and how long those buildings can last. People are making investments. And with that downturn in the economy, people are saying, well, now if I'm going to invest in something, I want to be in there for a longer period of time than before when it was more of a throwaway, like 10, 20 years, I'll be on to my next house.
Yeah.
Now they're looking at more like, I want to be in there for the rest of my life or for more like 50 years. And then I get something smaller or,
mm-hmm.
but longer term, people are going to the extreme of off-grid. People are now, we're getting a lot of contact from people now about off-grid and wanting to have that sustainability. Say, I don't want to rely on the grid anymore.
Do you think that's just a natural progression that it went from, we'll just get whatever house to, we want a nicer house to, I want a 50-year house to all of them be completely off-grid? Or is there's something else at play there that the off-grid stuff is sort of its own thing? What do you think is anything that you've seen that's been consistent about the people who'd asked for that?
They're self-reliant people. They like to, you know, really have control of their future. They want to use less energy. There's also a trend aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming kind of trendy to be more efficient with your home and to go to the extreme of off-grid. The realizations of it, the way that people come into it, they think, well, yeah, I want to be off-grid and I have the same budget as if I was buying a house that was on the grid.
Mm-hmm.
The grid supplied homes are more common. They cost less. Sure, because they're more available.
Yeah.
Off grid. Yeah. So if you're taking the same house that you have a budget for a house and you say, well, I'm going to go and build one similar but off grid,
mm-hmm.
one, you have to design a better house. It's not just about systems. There's a process that goes into designing and building the home.
Right.
That will make it support an off-grid lifestyle, which is little to no power,
mm-hmm.
little to no water. You know, those things, you have to manage those things. And you have to build systems that can support that. Or have it be so where if your systems fail, that you can live for a month without needing your solar power or your wind power, whatever power is being produced on site. So these things, when they start realizing what it takes to be off-grid, more of them are thinking like, I want to just go to the wall, hit the thermostat, be at the temperature I want to be. They're not thinking of it as, I'm going to build my own rooftop solar water heater, and I'm going to maintain it. I'm going to pull the shades on my windows when it's sunny out, you know, or just part of the way so I can get some heat, but not all the heat. It's just like, I want a normal home, but I want it to be off-grid.
Yeah, set it and forget it.
Exactly. That's where the costs really start to, it's like you want the modern conveniences. You want that sort of conventional home. But then there are those that do want, like I'll close the drapes. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll bring the blinds down. I'll do that little work. But most of it is more like just set it, forget it. I don't want to have to think about it too much.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to live like normal.
Mm-hmm.
I just want the systems to be off-grid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That comes with a cost.
Yeah.
But design and build a house to perform really well. And then all the systems become smaller and more efficient when your home does most of the work.
Okay.
Absolutely. Are there other possibilities that you're aiming for? Other outcomes that you see in the future that your efforts are kind of geared towards other than just content clientele and the ideal things? Or are there more tangible things that are on your wish list that you have to achieve?
There's a little joke that our subcontractors or other, you know, builder clients, architect clients that I consult with, they call the assembly that we typically use Chris's assembly. I mean, that's this common assembly, and it's different than what they're used to because they have cavity insulation is in the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we typically put everything to the outside because it's better to protect your building structure. So I have this type of assembly that works for the wall, the roof, and the floor, and anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep pushing that, and, you know, and I want to see that the industry, that the clients are demanding this sort of assembly. It's not using anything fancy. That's one thing I want to see go away. ICFs, SIPs, trendy products that they work in certain climates. They work really well. ICFs work better in cold climates, right? They work well if you want a concrete home.
And if you never want to change a wall or a window.
I mean, it's doable, right? It's there are ways to do it, but yeah, it's a lot more difficult. I mean, they're more resilient, you know, at least the concrete portion of it can withstand, you know, conditions, weather conditions that wood frame can't. But using conventional methods of construction and tools, conventional tools,
mm-hmm.
so that a framer can learn it in a day or half a day or shorter than that. I mean, I've taught somebody in a couple hours with a mock-up wall how to do this assembly, and it's all intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of showing them, and they say, oh, now I get it.
Yeah.
And then they take ownership of it. They say, oh, I've got this. And they do an excellent job. And so I want to see that become demanded by clients. Now, it's not going to be for, you know, like affordable housing folks. They don't know it. But they would like to have a house with this type of enclosure because it uses less energy and it's better on their pocketbooks as well as anybody's.
Chances also that having less maintenance,
less
mildew, yeah, mold,
maintenance, right?
Yeah, air quality,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So comfort, health, all that. It's good for,
you know. It's funny, people get insurance claims for fire. It's very difficult to get insurance claims for all of those other mm-hmm. things that come in and damage. And yet, all sort of that is still controllable in that wall. And if we were building things correctly,
yeah.
you could hold people liable
yeah.
for the moisture that gets into your house or for the bad airborne contaminants that get into your house.
Right.
But there's such a flippant attitude towards, well, there's nothing you can do about moisture in a house.
But what if we were to say there's nothing you can do about fire?
Yeah.
And you don't get a claim for that fire burning your house down. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But we shame us that how many more houses are damaged from moisture than from fire? And yet it's all controllable, it's predictable, and it's preventable.
Yeah.
Change the narrative and you get people's minds to think about it differently. And if you see the damage from that and that's what's causing your house to literally fall down, like a fire makes your house fall down,
mm-hmm.
if you were to see that, it would change so much and the demand for a better, that perfect wall would be higher.
Mm-hmm.
But right now it's just left to the builders and the academics and the engineers and architects of the industry.
And we can't stop fighting with these guys about it.
Right.
Right.
And get political action committee going at war
yep.
over raving or lowering
yep.
the standards. So the tighter they are, the better insulated they are, you're getting so much benefit from it. And we use a type of insulation that's used as a fire blocking.
So it is fire resistant. It's a fire resistant assembly. So there's so many benefits to that. And I just want to push for more traditional, conventional techniques and tools to be used to achieve this high performance rather than using different products that are new on the market that are going to make, you know, be the next big thing.
Very specialized.
Yeah. And let's get our buildings. I want the building codes to drive that and say that, and all of our incentives drive a better building envelope. Mm-hmm. Stop throwing incentives at solar panels until we get our buildings better, because 30 kilowatts would go a lot further
in a house that
was just completely air sealed, mm-hmm. down to a gnat's tail, mm-hmm. you know, and a better HVAC system in there, because when you tighten it up, you got to decrease your HVAC because mm-hmm. it's lower load. I'd like to see more of that, mm-hmm. you know, get the houses right, then apply some solar to it. Then the solar panel system doesn't need a tax credit. You don't have to go through that paperwork. You don't have to go through all those steps because the system will be smaller and more affordable mm-hmm. than if you had to go through the tax credits and all that process. It's like,
right.
Get your house right.
Yeah.
Your money goes a lot further with a building envelope
mm-hmm.
to tighten up the house and better insulate it than, you know, as opposed to buying a solar system that's right. only going to give you potentially just yeah. partial. It could give you all of it depending on your house and how much you use energy.
I hear the term imperfect wall is used sometimes, but you got a video about perfect wall? And is that basically the assembly that you're talking about? Is your very length of what you've come up with that you find as a perfect wall?
Yeah.
That term gets kind of loosely used. How would you define it in the simplest of terms? When you hear perfect wall, what's it supposed to mean to you?
Came up probably 50 years ago or more. I don't know. Who came up with it or when? I know Joe Stiebrick from Building Science Corporation. Most people think that he came up with that, but he has said it was before his time. It's really about building science. It's about how it performs.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got four control layers: water, air, vapor, and heat, and they're in that order for a reason. You want water's number one because you want to keep water around. It's damaging. It's
a problem.
Air is the next one. It's definitely the most important after water, because if you tighten up a house and don't do anything to the insulation, you're in a much better shape. Your system could be cut in half, mm-hmm. system size. I mean, so much can be air quality, everything, so many things.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you need to ventilate properly.
Yeah.
You don't want to just trap everything. And then vapor and heat. That's just like vapor diffusion relative, humidity mm-hmm. going through tiny little pores in your material.
Then that's left.
And then the insulation, you know, obviously that's controlling heat. And all those have to work together. They all have those same properties. So insulation has vapor properties. It has air tightness properties. Perfect wall is known to put all of those control layers in the same location. So essentially right on the outside of the sheathing, if you think of a wood frame wall. What most people know as a house wrap or your water resistive barrier, mm-hmm. WRB, is usually on the outside of sheathing. You want to put your insulation there, your water control layer, your air control layer, and your vapor control layer, all of it right in the same spot. That becomes a perfect wall, because then everything inside stays within conditioned space. Your moisture risk goes to practically zero.
Right.
Moisture meaning the moisture at the sheathing, you know. So that perfect wall can be applied to the wall, the roof, and the floor. The same principles, the same order of things. Get those control layers to the outside, protect the structure, and then everything else falls into place.
To create that with standard building materials, not the specialized,
right,
hard to find.
Right. Well, and that's the thing with like SIPs. You've got sheathing on both sides, you know, and it does have those properties, but then it's sitting on top of structure. And it essentially has that the control layer is in the right spot, but it's also not dealing with vapor properly because of ventilation of that assembly. So you have to design a vapor diffusion vent at the ridge line, and you have to make sure that the foam is adhered to everything and doesn't come apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then like ICFs, it has layers of insulation on the inside and the outside. They're not all in the same spot, so it's not following those principles. But so yes, that using conventional materials, tools, and techniques to put it together, have all those control layers on the outside. We, you know, details come out when you start talking about budget, what the house is going to look like, you decide, you start deciding what materials those are.
Yeah.
But just get them off the shelf instead of having it be in. Where can we find an installer for ICFs? That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Especially in the South.
And you didn't even mention the carbon footprint, right? You're talking about a dramatic difference in where that, what it takes to make those products.
Right.
And then your house is made out of styrofoam.
Yeah.
As its structure and as its
insulation. Yeah, yeah.
And there's so much glue in order to get it to hold together.
Right.
It really changes things.
Carbon footprint is where did it originate? Where did that material come from? You go back about 5 steps, there's probably 50 more steps to get to that step that was 5 steps ago.
Yep.
And yes, there's a formula for it all. And they have numbers that they have to publish. But it's just so complicated. It's like, do your best. We'll do our best. And we'll use the stuff that has the low numbers on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I put more into the conventional, trying to use the stuff we've been using for a long time that has a track record of not creating major global warming potential.
Right.
You know, and so woods, building the stone, and we've been using rocks to insulate for a while to block fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're using these materials that we know have been around a long time, and they haven't been proven to be a problem.
So there's people who come to you for your services, for your consulting, or for your design, or for your construction. But I want you to speak to the people who are maybe not in that position, but they still want to stand up. You know, this is a movement that has a lot of support for people who are not building anything,
right?
Like, and they're already set.
Right.
What is another opportunity for them to support or to get involved, either the building industry and what changes need to take place there, or just the trends of popular opinion? What are ways that you would say that people can be an advocate?
You know, my stepdad always said the way he would help any venture, anything that he believed in, is education. You know, he would educate himself and then try to educate others to help them understand what's going on so that they can, because if one person learns it and passes on the message, that will trickle down to someone else who is going to build a house. Maybe they're going to build a high rise. I like to do the videos to share this information and to get out there, let people know we're there, but it's also to let people know, here's what we've learned, and here's what we know, and it's working, and this is why.
Here's what's important.
Right. And hopefully it's helpful, useful to you. Well, take that information, maybe do your own research, call me, we'll talk it through, learn something different in addition to that, and then share it with someone else. And that person can go and find out that I may have said something like, glass is the worst insulator that we use, that we build with. You know, like, it's terrible, but we build high rises that are all glass.
Mm-hmm.
Some developer might hear my video that I said that in and say, well, maybe I want to do something more classic with more stone and less glass, because I want to be a steward.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the best way, whether you're going to do something or not. Education, educating yourself, sharing that is really the best way for people to get the information out there, to help the industry.
So that comes full circle. So why do you put out so much content?
Yeah.
Is that you're trying to create advocates, empower people, and arm them with the right information so that we can all make a bigger difference.
That's right. That's it. And I think that what we've learned, and I think it is important for us to share that. I mean, I mentioned Joe Stiebert before. Go to his website. There's so much information free to the world that you can go in public. But still, he's always saying, share everything. Because that's how, yes, it's sharing your secrets, maybe. But in this world, everybody's helping each other.
Yeah.
You know, especially in this industry, you know, Matt Reisinger out of Austin is a great example of that. He's trying to get everybody to be one mind and just let's share this together.
Yeah. I find the Secrets website is fascinating for us in the trade.
Yeah.
But it's a little over the head of anybody who's not got our background and stuff like that. So you see people like Matt Reisinger take what Joe said and break it down to the simplest of terms.
That's right.
And that's a lot of fun to watch and
it helps to reference that. It helps a lot. And I would put out a lot more content if I had time. But I've got people wanting what we offer. And so I'm going to be able to, that's more important, you know, for them and for us. And I want to spend time with those documents that Joe produces and be able to say, well, what does this mean for you, builder? Mm-hmm. What does it mean for you, architect? What about you, homeowner? Just a quick anecdote. A client of ours showed up at one of the first meetings. He had on the table with him the mixed humid climate builder's guide from Joe Stiebrick with him. And he read it front to back. And he's a web designer.
Wow.
And he's like, I want my house to be built on these principles.
There you go.
I said, you came to the right place.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all best practices. And so that's what we have to figure out. How do we take those ideas, those principles, and create something that we can use with conventional, more available information?
The return on investment, either through a lack of maintenance, the longevity of right building, energy costs, the stability of the people who can live there for a longer period of time.
That's right.
Then the property value of it over time. There's so many different ways that you can get a return on that investment.
That's right.
That it really is.
Yes.
It's not a luxury.
Quick story about that one where I had a Scandinavian friend come visit and she was buying a pair of shoes and she was picking apart the seams, literally looking at how the shoe was put together, looking at every stitch. And I had never seen anybody do that, you know, just like really wanting to know because the mentality there was, I need this to last for a really long time. I only have a certain amount of money in my life. I want this forever. And as long as I can possibly have it. So I don't want it to come apart in a week. And that's what people are doing now with homes.
And yeah,
that's why they come to us. They see that we're trying to make sure that every seam, everything is going to last for their lifetime and beyond because they don't want to throw them away.
Thank you for joining us, friends, for another serving of Common Sense. This was not complicated, just green. Sponsored by Creative Interface Architecture and Interiors, redefining the impact of great design, one client at a time. Check us out at www.creativeinterface.design.